You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Good morning if you're just after joining us. If you are, I don't know where you be between 9 and 10, but certainly well worth listening to the podcast, which will be online a little later on, or indeed watch it back on YouTube. We had an interesting conversation about a ontheditch.com article which leaked Attorney General advice back from a couple of years ago to the government as it relates to the defective concrete block scheme. And since then, lots of you have been messaging in, as you can imagine. What about the people who are buying these defective houses at half price or even less and are applying for the scheme? I know a few houses that have been bought knowing they were defective, and one is due for demolishing in October, and a few are in the process of getting on the scheme. Surely the families who are paying their mortgages and in this from the beginning should be first in line, and those getting a house half price should be paying for the repairs. I'm not sure how that works. You have to have owned a house for a certain amount of time, do you not? And I suppose we don't know if they're being mortgaged or if they're taken out, if they're on the scheme. I don't know. I didn't think you could purchase a house and go on the scheme. I'll get the timeline of that. We've appealed the HS decision to do outer and inner leaf only in our home, as all our retaining walls have mica 4 months now and no receipt that they've received the appeal. We are in limbo. How can we shaft the scheme? If it's tested, which is a rip-off price for a start, the evidence will state the common problem. We're left not being able to build houses too high with the high cost of building them now. At every stage, everyone is getting paid over the top. Then we're penalised for downsizing. This is also causing division in parts of the country who think we're getting houses for free. We never wanted this to happen. Exactly. And the problem is that the Attorney General's advice is that really those affected by this would try and do up their houses fancy. Defective blocks. We got our allowance from the council 2 weeks ago for outer leaf on three sides and inner and outer leaf on one wall. The allowance is €273,000, engineer fee of €12,000. So €261,000 worked a tender to eight builders the first week of April. Only one builder has put in a tender. Their price, €323,000. It would probably be more cost effective to demolish, rebuild. So we're going to look into a demolish, rebuild than outer leaf. So their allowance from the council for three sides and inner and outer leaf on one wall, €273,000. One builder has put in a price because it's not a very attractive job to get tied into, I'd imagine. €323,000, so that's a shortfall of €50,000 on a partial rebuild there. Of course, says the Attorney General's advice story is outrageous. Even worse, the government accepted that advice as if homeowners haven't had to put up with enough. Now, we don't know for a fact that it did. You may presume that they did accept that advice, but obviously I can't say for certain that that is the case. It is advice. Hi, Greg. Great show. As for slowing down access, why do we have to download info from COCO, then upload it, but back to them? Other info is government-based. If you provide PPN and MRPN and address, all info is available to the council. The scheme is there to slow things down. So one sort of portal should be talking to the other, you'd imagine. Important piece of information, by the way, if you're out in the roads. Would you please inform your listeners about a very bad oil spill that goes from the Roadhouse Bar Capri down to Glenfinn Road? Thank you. Be careful on that road. It's a bad oil spill, we're told, and the road's damp and slippy and all that kind of stuff. Hi, Greg, you've got your house tested and it has mica. It still has mica. It can't go away like that, let's be honest. I think if you're referring the story we covered last week, and it's in the Daily Mail today, to get on the scheme, an engineer, this is why you can't fill the cracks and tidy up your house, because an engineer goes out and has a look at your house and they make a visual determination as to whether they believe your house is defective concrete or not. That visual determination and a report where they have to measure the cracks and all this kind of stuff is then forwarded to the council, and that's what gets you onto the scheme in the first place. There's then subsequent testing, which involves boring and the testing of the materials, and then that determines really categorically through the scheme whether or not you have defective concrete. So you wouldn't have had, in this case, if this is the case you're talking of, there wasn't a test that said there was mica. There was this visual assessment. Greg, I spent my entire day yesterday putting cattle out of my garden. Last night I was looking forward to Spain versus France. 5 minutes in, about 20 cows were on my street looking in the window. I missed the game getting rid of them. An estate worth millions and they can't keep cows in a field. They also are on a road occasionally. An accident waiting to happen today will be spent cleaning up. Cow dung everywhere. That comes in from Patrick. Patrick, I know you mentioned where the cows you believe came out of. We have to double check that just before we can say that publicly, even though I know you know what the story is. I was watching the news last night, just before we take the bingo numbers. I was watching the news last night, and quite rightly so, there was headline news and outrage at a missile hitting a hospital, a children's hospital in Kyiv, and awful, awful scenes, absolutely terrible. And then way, way, way down in the news, there was another report about the plight of people in Palestine. And it didn't, the whole thing doesn't, I really find it hard to sort of, I don't consume an awful lot of media, but I find it hard to, in that we're presented with two stories, and the if you look at where they are, where the outrage is and where they are in the bulletin, that in some way a child's life in Palestine is less important than a child's life in Ukraine. Now, can I just say very, very clearly, this is not to say we shouldn't be talking about Ukraine, but I can't understand how we've got world leaders and we've got the media all talking about that horrible attack in Ukraine on that children's hospital. And no one's doing the same really about what's happening to children in Palestine. And the reason I had to mention it is because I can't do anything about it, but I just don't understand why it seems that a Palestinian's child's life is less important than a Ukrainian's child's life. Why would that be? Now, I know for much of the West, you know, Russia bad, Israel good. I get that, right? But still, I think the media shouldn't follow that. I think the awful situation, the plight of the Palestinian children should be equal to the Palestinian to the plight of the Ukrainian children. I just don't understand. I get the way global politics work. It's disgusting, in my view, that it's okay for one person to do something and it's terrible for the other to do it. But for the media to follow that, I find very, very difficult to. And it's really why I don't watch an awful lot of media. I certainly pick and choose and make up my own mind in the middle. But all children's lives are equal and all should be given equal coverage, especially when it's through war and the horrendous actions of other human beings. I don't know, I just wanted to get it off my chest because I was watching, I thought, what is going on in this world? Okay, next guest on the show is listener Christina. Hi, Christina.
Hello there, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, Christina. You've been, like the rest of us, digesting this leaked correspondence from the Attorney General to Dara O'Brien and others. Your reaction to it?
I absolutely have been trying to digest it, and indeed I'll be reading up much, much more on it very shortly, so that I do have all of the absolute facts on it. But I'll tell you, I think along with everybody else, I'm absolutely, not only am I shocked, I'm absolutely disgusted at the fact that this broad sweep advice is what was received by the government and the scheme was designed upon it. Now, what I want to say about that is this. The Attorney General has an exceptionally important position in this country, and he is appointed by the government to advise the government on all kinds of decisions that they have to make and the impact that those decisions may have on the country and how they run the country and what they put in place. So he has a very unique and special position. Now, what enrages me is to think about the suffering that the people of this county and in the Northwest region and further afield have actually suffered psychologically, emotionally, the stress that they have suffered, the impact on their families. And we all know that the research tells us that this has a long-term impact on their health and their well-being and all of that. To turn around and describe or allude to, should I say, allude to the fact that some people, after going through this, would try to gain something from it, when all they wanted was to put a house in place for themselves. And the integrity that they have, that they worked hard, they built their house, they paid for it, they paid the banks. You know, this is just simply unacceptable. And it is also unacceptable for the government of this people to design the advice based, to design the scheme based on that advice, and to treat the people of this country with such, I don't know, would you call it disdain? Would you call it disrespect? I don't know what word to use, because I am quite animated this morning to think that the families that have suffered in this peninsula of Inishowen and further afield in Donegal and further afield in the country, that the leaders that are appointed by us to look after our interests in this country, describe us as a people. Now, I know that many people out there will appreciate the fact that, yes, there may be people in this country that may try to kind of bend rules, bend schemes, gain money, gain something out of it. But in the main, we are talking about people who have suffered. We're talking about people who have suffered to the point of losing members of their family. We're talking about people under pressure every single day with letters from banks. We're talking about people who are distressed, going to bed, crying and worried about their children, their children's health and their own health, and how they're going to get out of this rut. How dare they? That's what I have to say about it. How dare they? Give that advice, number one. Okay, you can put precautions in place for some people that may try to bend rules yet, but you don't design a scheme based on the fact that the underpinning assumption of that scheme is, let's try and put them all off getting some form of remediation here.
Christina, what do you think this line of advice means? If the scheme is made more generous than at present, it's also likely to increase the number of applicants. That's bizarre, isn't it?
It is absolutely bizarre because there's two different ways of saying that. Also likely means the potential is that is going to happen. You know, instead of saying there is the potential, when you say something is likely, you're predicting that it's actually going to happen. You are making a claim. You're making a claim about the calibre and the integrity of the people that are applying to this scheme. That is unacceptable, Greg. Mm. And I do actually think apology is needed to the people that are trying to get their way in life, trying to just build a house, trying to just recoup and trying to kind of reheal from this exceptionally negative experience, and to think that that is the level of the advice and a scheme was built around it and to enhance it.
It's also just to talk of the attitude towards us. Attorney General, yes, Paul Gallagher advises that the government scheme to compensate those affected by the microcrisis would lead to significant abuses, not isolated instances, but significant abuses from homeowners applying. And he warned Housing Minister Dara O'Brien, any applicant will pitch his or her claim on the most generous basis that can be credibly advanced. So that's a sweeping statement. So that says everyone affected by this will try and maximise. Even if it goes beyond actually the condition of the house before defective concrete was discovered, that we as a whole, is that kind of the language that you think requires an apology? The generalisation of victims of this crisis?
I think the generalisation, there was an accusation and an underpinning assumption that basically everyone that is applying for the scheme lacks integrity.
Mm.
And that's not acceptable.
Okay.
That is not acceptable.
Right, Christine, I think we're all sort of digesting it. We'll see what the guys at ontheditch.com have. We'll go beyond this, but it's those I've been speaking to, and I'll include you in this, feel like it's a real smack in the face, if you know what I mean, considering that everything else that people are having to deal with as well. Christina, thank you for talking to me. I do appreciate it. 086 60 25000. Let us know what you think. Greg, how many scandals does a government do before people wake up? You have cervical cancer, the referendum we had a few months ago, the money that was wasted on that, defective concrete and more. Besides, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are big participants in all of this. And as for our local minister, he should come on and answer questions. How can a man who's so biased against quarries be leading some of the research? This is not how science is supposed to be done. It's time the Attorney General stepped down. Shame on him. Well, this is the former Attorney General there. I get you, though. Hi, Greg. Very insulting to defective concrete homeowners, re-Attorney General's advice. As far as I know, the Attorney General attends cabinet meetings. So, yes, all ministers should know his comment, surely. Another, what about all the houses taken down following IS 465 saying it was mica? Does this mean houses were demolished that shouldn't have been? Hi, Greg. Can you ask Professor Dunlop, does he feel responsible for spreading the mica misinformation before he had any research? He pushed the mica myth along with MAG and the government. I'm not really sure anyone is... I don't know the motive. Well, I kind of have a sense of the motivation of that question. Thanks for texting in. Okay, just before a break, hi Greg, just wondering if you could mention about a coffee morning Rosemary Anderson is having this Saturday. It's from 9:30 to 1 p.m. It's in New Mills, with all proceeds going to the Donegal Hospice. We've the air code here, by the way, if you wanted. Hi, if you could make an announcement on the radio, it would be greatly appreciated. My dog Rocky went missing today. That was yesterday, the 9th of July, at around 8 a.m. in Milford. She was on the back of my dad's van and her tracker stopped working in Milford. And my dad noticed she was not there anymore in Remalton. She's brown and white Australian collie and is very friendly. Have you seen this brown and white Australian collie? Went missing around 8 a.m. yesterday in the Milford area. And just a quick request, John and Anna Porter, they're in Buncrana and are 53 years married today. A big happy 53rd wedding anniversary to all of you, to both of you from all of us, and also from Catherine, Peter, Ruan and Tom in Galway. All right, back after these. Now, the government is being urged to give tax breaks to those who try to be physically active to encourage people to stay healthy. A new lobby group, Fit for Life, Irish Physical Activity Alliance, or IPAA, wants people with gym membership or who attend yoga classes to be able to claim tax back on those amounts under health expenses. Dr. Neil Barrett, owner of Fit Hub Ireland and lecturer in sports and exercise science, joins us in the studio now. Good morning to you. Thank you very much for calling in again, Neil.
Morning, Greg.
And also we have Liam McBride, manager of No Barriers Gym. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so Neil, we spoke on this issue not so long ago. How has the story progressed since then and the campaign progressed since then?
Really good progression so far. So I think I was on about maybe 8 or 9 weeks ago. Since then, the IPA has been to Leinster House and we presented to a cross-political party group. Really well received. We're very confident that this should get over the line. Since then, we've also had recommendations from the HSE that individuals of all ages should be doing 2 resistance training sessions a week, so that helps to bolster our kind of campaign. It's been received very well. Lots of parties, lots of senators, lots of TDs getting behind it. So we're back in Leinster House towards the end of the month, and we're pretty confident that it should go through in the pre-budget submission.
And I suppose, Liam, too, we have to take into consideration that less than 4 out of 10 of us are at a normal weight. 6 out of 10 are not. 37% would be classed as overweight and a further 23% obese. Now, that obviously has and can have implications for your general health.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. As Neil was saying, like it's really important now that we try and get ahead of the curve rather than it's easier to kind of treat it before it happens rather than trying to treat it after.
Well, you spend a euro now and save 5 down the line,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, so that's kind of exactly, and that's some of the points that I believe that the group is trying to make to the government now, that for every euro that we spend now, it'll save us a lot down the line.
And of course, there's obvious things like, and you said the professionals in this regard, so agree or disagree or expand on this, but you know, Neil, we can sort of think in the now, you know, about how your physical health is now, maybe the impacts on your heart and all of that very important stuff as well. But we are aging. We're living longer, which is fantastic, right? So we want to have as much mobility and good health to enjoy those extra years that science seems to be awarding us.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to touch on the return of investment. So we actually did our costings for the government. So it will cost 19 million, but the return on investment will be 208. Right. So it's a 10x return.
19?
19. That's what it's going to cost.
I mean, in the wider health budget, that
drop in the ocean.
It literally is a drop in the ocean.
But no, you're correct. I mean, as Liam mentioned, it's trying to get ahead of the curve. So we have so many problems facing the HSE and individuals as we go down the line. So medicine has advanced beyond the point that being unhealthy doesn't really matter. We can extend your life, but not necessarily your health span. So I suppose the 2 biggest problems we're facing down the line are fragility fractures, so sarcopenia, which is a loss of muscle as we get older, and also fragility fractures. So fragility fractures, I think the numbers are we're at around 47% more nursing homes by 2030. It's around 12,000 more beds. We don't have the capacity for that. And we have the highest rate of osteoporosis in Ireland. And that is mainly females over 65. So we do need to get ahead of the curve. We need to try and improve people's health span, not just the lifespan.
And how would regular exercise do that? Or how does it do it?
Well, resistance training specifically.
What is resistance training?
So resistance training is anything using body weight or free weights. Mm-hmm. So you can do like squats and pushes and pull-ups, or you can do deadlifts and machine-based weights. There's loads of different ways. And everybody has this idea in their head when you think about weightlifting, that you have these, you know, big muscle-bound males or females throwing weights around the gym, and it's not a place for an older person, and that's just not the case. Mm-hmm. And actually the fastest-growing demographic in the country that are joining gyms are the over 50s. And that's really part of why we're here today, is to try and talk about the education piece around that, is trying to get older people moving, but not even older people. If you're over 40 years of age, you need to be resistance training at least twice a week. Otherwise, you're going to run into these problems down the line.
And even something as quite simple as balance.
Yeah.
You know, we keep our balance, and it happens. We don't really realise it's happening, but all the while muscles are being triggered and all that type of stuff. And if they fail, and we saw that a little bit through COVID, where older people particularly were a little bit more inactive, that they were struggling with balance, and that obviously leads to falls or reduced mobility. You know, they don't get back to where they once were.
Yeah. So, in order to maintain balance, is essentially coordination, but how fast your muscles fire to stop yourself to maybe catch
that's
your footing.
Involuntary, really, yeah, isn't it?
It is, but before you fall.
Yeah.
So if you have more muscle, and especially more muscle strength, then your reaction time is quicker. So if you can stop yourself from actually falling, then you're in a much better place than if you can't. And also, there's a very scary stat. They did a study in a Singapore hospital back in 2018, looking at around 200,000 patients, most of which were female. And of those population that fail, if they fail and broke their hip, not people who elect to go in and get a hip replacement, but if people actually fall and break their hip, only 1 in 3 of those people saw 36 months later.
Mm.
So it's an incredibly scary thing for mortality.
Liam, it's an interesting trend, isn't it? And a welcome trend to see more older people get into the gym, because I suppose it's like a brand new car. You can get a brand new car, and if that were our bodies, and you can drive it and not service it, not change the oil, not do anything, and it will run for a certain period of time, but then it will stop unless you service it. And I suppose if we look at ourselves like that, we can be somewhat inactive and get away with it for a certain amount of our life, depending on the individual. But there does come a time, if we want to keep running, that we do have to, you know, service ourselves, look after ourselves, exercise, etc.
Yeah, that's right. And we've actually, in the kind of recent times there, just started a class aimed at active aging called Silvers. So again, we're trying to promote active aging, and it's not necessarily aimed at any one particular age group. It's the demographic, as Neil said, would tend to be kind of 50 plus. But it was trying to get people that have maybe never been to the gym before in, and just to show them the benefits of physical activity and exercise. And we recently got new equipment in there, which is kind of very accessible. It's air resisted. So your weight machines that you would see in your commercial gyms, they would be all a pin and plate loaded, and the increments would be that bit bigger, where you can only go up in maybe 2.5 or 5 kg increments, which is not ideal for people that have never done strength training or resistance training before. But the machinery we have in now is all air resisted and done with a touchscreen tablet, and you can go up in increments of 100 grams. So for people, especially the older people that maybe haven't trained before, it's ideal being able to go up in them smaller increments just as they slowly get stronger.
So shall we reiterate, because I think it's actually quite important, and I knew it but I hadn't heard it again, just what Neil said there about really what we actually need to be doing to see the benefits of it, okay? So if you are not as active as you should be and you begin resistance training, let's say you're a 65-year-old woman, right? Mm-hmm. This is not with a view necessarily to running a marathon or dropping 5 dress sizes or whatever it might be. Your target actually is just to have that resistance training and to build up, your strength.
Yeah.
Now, if there are benefits other than that, fantastic. But this is about just making sure your body is as healthy as possible as you age.
Yeah, that's right. And the more resistance training you can do, you can maintain muscle mass, which, as Dale said, it helps with muscles firing, and it'll help maintain bone density as well, so that you're both less likely to fall with a better muscle mass. And if you do happen to fall with higher bone density, haven't done resistance training, you're also less likely to have fractures that will hospitalise you or lead to kind of more severe injuries.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting one, because I've spent an awful lot of time with older people, and one fall, even without a break, they change how they walk, or they have in my life, they've changed how they walk and become nervous, and it's astonishing. And that's even without a fracture nail. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if you've seen that in your own life, but from being sort of walking around like a 50-year-old to all of a sudden walk shuffling almost for fear of falling.
Well, even at that, it's a very good point, because it's not just the risk of fall and what can happen after that. If an older person takes a fall and they don't end up with a severe injury, they're still less likely to become socially engaged.
Yeah.
They're going to go out less. Mm-hmm. They're going to walk less. They're going to move less. They become isolated. And then that begins just a snowball effect of decline from there on. So it really is just about building and maintaining function. Like we want to age well and gracefully. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to live out the last few years of your life, hopefully the last 10, 15, in a really healthy place.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be relying on medication just to keep you, you know, surviving. You're hoping to thrive through those times if possible.
And there's many older people, and it's not just about older people, and I want to actually talk about the scheme, but I just want to reiterate this example. Like, older people that maybe had a hip replacement or were in hospital for a period of time, and because there's a physio focus on getting them back on the feet, in really quite short amount of time for a lot of people, that resistance training, even pushing against someone's hand in your bed or whatever, very actually quite quickly for a lot of people, gets them back up on their feet again. So that proves, do you know what I mean, from going to a position where you've been lying for a bit to getting up on your feet again, it shows how it works. And there's people listening, I'm sure, have been through that process. So, I mean, obviously, it's very important to have this conversation and get that information out there. But what impact do we believe this government initiative might have? So just remind us again, Neil, what's being proposed, what you're hopeful will be adopted, and how you think it will work.
Well, our main, I suppose, our main focus is to try and get a tax rebate for people who go to the gym, go to classes, or have memberships of any clubs that promote physical activity. So 20% is what we're looking for. It's not a huge amount of money. And the system by which you can claim that money back already exists. It's the Med 1 form. You know, you can claim back through physiotherapy, medications, etc. So we're pretty confident that'll go through. That's in the short term. What we would really like to see after that, so hopefully at ATU here in Donegal, we're going to do some studies into the efficacy of this policy. And if we can show 10% increase or more, we'd push then to try and get a higher tax rebate for everybody. And also we really want to push for free membership for over 65s.
Mm-hmm.
So they've actually introduced this in Singapore in 2020, and they increased that population activity in the gym by 47%.
Wow.
And they are the healthiest country in the world.
And you know what, I think particularly in this day and age, as we get older and money gets tighter, those are the type of things that you don't do.
Yeah,
you know, when you're looking to spread whatever little bit of money that you have, which affects a lot of people, you're not going to say, right, I'm 66, I'm going to join the gym now. You're going to say, I want to make sure the house is warm, or that I have enough money to be comfortable, to have food and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. And the other thing, I suppose, when you look at it from a pragmatic point of view, that most of these people are retired. They have time on their hands, and the downtime for gyms during the day is from like maybe 11, 12 up until 4:30 p.m. So that time of the day is perfect. It's quiet. You can become much more social as well with people like-minded, similar age, similar functionality, who are going to the gym to do other things. So it's not just helping you to get physically better, but those emotional connections you make with people are incredibly important at that age.
There is just a link with the gym and trying to look sexy that I can't break, if you know what I mean, that the gym is about going and getting your abs and your big butt or whatever it might be, you know, but it's much more than that. Neil, obviously, you know, Liam, obviously we've talked an awful lot about, you know, the benefits for older people and all that, but there's people with different ranges of abilities at different ages. Maybe you could be in a wheelchair or whatever it might be. There's lots of different cohorts of people that would benefit from tax breaks or, you know, reduced access to different types of activity, gym, yoga, etc.
Yeah, that's right, Greg. We actually have quite a number of, or a very wide range of abilities over training with us on No Barriers. So we have wheelchair users, we have members with Down syndrome who graduated from one of our programs that we ran through the foundation, and then we have our regular gym members, our older population as well that have joined the Silvers class. And I mean, it doesn't really matter
what age is that for?
The Silvers. I didn't really put an age on it as such.
It might put me 55 plus.
Might
put me going off calling it that.
Over 40s.
Sorry, Greg.
You've had a suggestion for a name, 086. I mean, it's fine, don't get me wrong, but You know, there's a lot of ones I know heading into the age bracket silvers.
Yeah.
Where are you going? I don't know.
I thought it was a very good name. Sometimes.
So are you sitting there with your lovely dark hair?
We're trying not to alienate it and make it too much about the older population and just kind of capture. We have a lot of people
even under 40 that are from pensioners. You know what I mean? Come on.
I have friends in their early 40s and they've been silver since their 20s. So, you know,
is it on their Tinder bio?
No.
I don't freaking think so. I'm only joking. It's all a bit of fun. And if it gets the name out there, that's good.
Yeah.
Right. So it's good that you're getting good positive feedback from it. As you say, being backed up by, the science is there. You know, the science is there. It's breaking barriers, removing barriers. Anything else you just want to add, Liam, Neil? How do people back it, I suppose? Or is it just keep it in the back of your head? Make sure you mention it to your local TD or local rep?
Well, even that as well. Probably the IPAA Fit for Life campaign on social media. So if you have Facebook, if you have Instagram, log in, give it a follow, share whatever. There's loads of really good information going up every day. So we're actually hoping to be funded by the National Institute of Health to develop an information education initiative throughout the country over the next 24 months as well, because it's not, people need to know, like, once you're well informed, you can make better decisions. So we need to get the information out there and just let people know how important it is for all ages, genders, demographic, socioeconomic status. It doesn't matter. It's for everybody. Everybody should be lifting and moving at least 2 to 3 times per week.
Yeah, and there's sometimes I look at some of these campaigns and I see obvious gaps, right? But I don't in any of this one. And one of the ones, I think, one of the points that's really well made here is that you want the government to be all in on this. The tax break, agreeing to that, that's grand. But you want them to sort of back a public information campaign as well to say, look, this is actually the future. This is what can be achieved. That's very important, I think, a really important element to that, that there's that buy-in side to it as well.
Yeah, and that's it. We're not looking for one. We're not advocating for just one side to profit from it. Obviously, it's going to help businesses, gyms around the country to get more memberships. It's going to help people on the tax rebate side of things, put some more money in their pockets. But the overarching theme here is trying to build a healthier nation.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so IPAA.
Yeah.
Dot.
Fit for Life.
Fit for Life.
Yeah.
Is that the website?
Yeah, so you can go to the Irish, it'll be the IPAA Fit for Life is the website and the social media Instagram.
I think a lot of people prefer the Facebook side of it. It's nice to interact that way. All right, very interesting. Liam McBride, manager of No Barriers, great to have you over. Thanks very much for coming in and great to see you again, Dr. Neil Barrett. And interesting in such a short space to see the progress in this, which is fantastic as well. Neil's owner of Fit Hub Ireland and lecturer in sports and exercise science down at the ATU.
Yeah.
Okay. Brilliant stuff, Neil, Liam. Thank you very, very much indeed. 086 60 25,000. If you want to have a say, Nicola. Nicola Sadlier is head of fraud at Bank of Ireland and joins us now. Hi, Nicola.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good. Nice to speak to you. Right, you and other lending institutions, everyone really are warning us about those of us heading on holidays to be extra vigilant for fraud. So, what are the pitfalls we should be avoiding? I wonder, Nicola.
Yeah, and look, Greg, it's hard to think about in weather like today, but really it is summer season and a lot of people are planning to travel. So we've come out with a warning really just to remind customers just a couple of simple steps to protect themselves from fraud. So really around any transactions you're making around your holiday, so that includes accommodation, but just really to keep your guard up against the possibility of fraud. So really, if you're away abroad and using ATMs or paying for items, just to be extra vigilant around your card and keeping it in your sight. And also urging customers just to add their emergency 24/7 phone line into their contacts in the event that they do come across or have any issues.
Is it still the case that it's advisable, Nicola, to advise your bank if you're heading abroad? I haven't been away for a while, but sometimes I found it wasn't with your bank at that time, but I found that, you know, if the bank can see activity on your account in a different country, sometimes they can withhold access to the card or whatever. Is it still normal practice to advise your bank if you are traveling abroad?
So, Greg, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
But certainly what we would say is obviously make sure your cards are in date. Just double check that expiry date, but also it is worthwhile checking your contact details with the bank are up to date in case they do need to reach out to you. So that's the advice we'd say, but there isn't pre-advice. You don't need to tell your bank that you're traveling anymore, but certainly just, you know, as a course, just to make sure that your contact details are correct. So if we did, or if the bank did need to reach out to you, that they have your correct mobile and email information. And also just to keep an eye out for that as well.
Okay.
If they're, if you receive SMSs from your bank, obviously to pick them up when you're away. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important.
And so, speed is now we're going to talk about some of the things we should be avoiding or being cautious about. But if we do notice anything untoward, the quicker we can get in contact with whichever bank it is, but in this case, obviously, the Bank of Ireland fraud team, the better, presumably.
Exactly, yeah. So, look, we're available with colleague support 24/7, and we've shared out our information. I can call it out at the end as well in relation to our contact number. But we're available. So, yeah, let us know if you get into any kind of difficulty in relation to losing your card, or also if you have a suspicion of fraud. We'll be available to get on that matter right away and support you.
Yeah, shoulder surfing is something we don't hear as much about as we did in the past, but it can happen as well. And the thing is also, I think, when we have to take into account, Nicola, is that often those that are involved in this type of fraudulent activity, they're not just doing it on a whim. You know, they're highly trained. They know what to do. They know, you know, our patterns and what works. So we have to do as much as we can, don't we, to ensure that we don't, you know, give them our information to easily or at all, but also to yeah. we're careful about, you know, what we withdraw and how we display that cash and all that kind of stuff. So have you any sort of general tips as it relates to, you know, using ATMs, accessing cash, that type of thing?
Yeah, so look, shoulder surfing actually hasn't gone away, and it has made a bit of a comeback, and it is, especially even in when you're standing in a shop. So not only at ATMs. So again, we're really just trying to urge customers just to be alert for it and always to cover your PIN or when you're paying for any items and keep your card in your sight. It is definitely organized crime gangs, and particularly when you're away, maybe a little bit more relaxed. So just to keep your guard up, and when you're in unfamiliar surroundings or maybe an older looking ATM, maybe move on to a more up-to-date one where you can also see some of the anti-fraud devices on the ATM. Like, you know, you can sometimes see an extra PIN pad cover. Mm. All of that is extra support or protection for you when you're actually keying in your PIN. So really, it's just to be aware that those kind of attempts could be going on. And yeah, if you take those additional precautions, watch out for those ATMs. Move on to the next one if it's in a kind of remote location as well.
Yeah, don't and obviously really, take out too much cash either. Don't be rooting around in your wallet, your purse, your handbag, whatever it might be, your bum bag, because people might be watching and they might not, you know, sort of intervene right where you're there, but they could track you or whatever. It's common sense stuff, but I think sometimes we're on holidays, we just sort of, we can let caution go to the wind.
Yeah. And look, again, also just, you know, keep a check on, regularly check your statements too on what's gone through. And again, you know, if you spot anything unusual, give us a call. Look, it's timing. You know, it's just important. It's a gentle reminder, really, also to kind of keep your cards in different locations. So, you know, that not all your cards are in the one wallet. And if you did, unfortunately, have your wallet stolen or lose your wallet, that all your cards are gone. Mm-hmm. So those hopefully tips land with customers, because like that, it's a certain time of year everyone's been waiting for, and you want to avoid being a victim of fraud.
Yeah, accommodation scams. A quick word on that, if you don't mind, Nicola.
Yeah, sure. So look, I guess, you know, we have seen where customers have bought or what they believe booked online, but not directly with established letting agents. And unfortunately, when they arrive and they're looking to collect keys, that the accommodation is actually not available at all or doesn't even exist. So really, it's just to remind people to do a lot of research and just really to book directly with established letting agents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, upfront possibly booking deposits, but to try not pay in full. Now, look, that's not always the case, but just to be really do research, check reviews so that you're not caught out. on accommodation scams.
And between sort of, you know, dodgy phone calls, texts where we click links or where we answer phone calls or we're talk, like, I think when we consent to stuff, it's more complicated sometimes to unwind that. And a lot of the scams we talk to, people had a Bank of Ireland rep on one line, in inverted commas, a Revolut rep on the other, in inverted commas, and consenting to give details and transactions and stuff. A lot of people still getting caught out with that. So it was, if it were me, if anyone contacted me, I'd hang up and then contact the bank on the numbers I trust. Emergency contact numbers, 1-800-946-764. If in the Republic, outside the Republic, it's 35356-775-7007. That's just for Bank of Ireland. But whatever your bank is, put those numbers in your phone, because I've found myself panicking a little bit and Googling and searching. And when you're under pressure, it's not the right way to do it. But yeah. For now, Nicola Sadlier, thank you very much indeed. Nicola is Head of Fraud at Bank of Ireland.